Right. Evening, folks. And welcome to this evening's program talk at the Staple Inn Actuarial Society. My name is Natanya Rolofsa, and I am the Honorary Secretary of SIAS. Before I introduce tonight's talk, there's four notices about upcoming SIAS events. Firstly, our next program talk will be on retirement challenges facing future generations on Thursday, the 18th of January. Further details are available on SIAS's website. As part of that, for all future SIAS talks, we'll be introducing online registration to better understand and manage our attendee profile. So for those of you that aren't SIAS members, we will be introducing a £10 charge with ticket purchase available via our website. On Monday, the 18th of December, we also have a social event, ice skating at Canary Wharf. Tickets are available on the website, and a glass of mulled wine can be enjoyed alongside your skating. To dampen your January blues, we're also organising a pool tournament on Tuesday, the 9th of January. So further details on that can also be found on the SIAS website. Moving over to a few standard notices about tonight's event. It is hosted by SIAS, so those of you who aren't members, we do encourage you to join and help keep these program events sustainable. Membership is extremely good value at £24 for fellows and £12 for students. The attendance book is outside in the smaller room, so for those of you who haven't signed in yet, you can sign in on your way out. These talks do not automatically get added to your CPD record, so please remember to update your CPD in the normal way after tonight. If the fire alarm sounds during the meeting, please exit using the fire exit at the back of the hall. It's not a test. And finally, a reminder to switch your mobile phones to silent. Tonight's talk and the Q&A afterwards will run from now to 8 p.m. in order to meet the 2 hours professionalism CPD requirement. If you have any questions, please raise your hand and a microphone will be brought to you. There is a bottle of champagne on offer for the best contribution to the discussion by a student member of the IFOA, and another for the best contribution from a fellow of the IFOA who has qualified within the last 5 years. Please state your name and which of these categories you fall in before asking any questions. Following the meeting, there will be sandwiches and networking drinks in the smaller room, and we've also added some mince pies just to add a Christmassy theme, so please do help yourselves. Back to tonight's talk. I'm pleased to introduce Helen Gregson. Helen is an education actuary at the IFOA and will lead an interactive session on tonight's subject, commercialism versus professionalism. Helen has been involved in professionalism training and the education of future actuaries for the last 15 years. Prior to this, she advised clients on pensions and other employee benefits with Willis Towers Watson and Aon Hewitt. Over to you.
Thank you. Well, good evening, everybody. And this is our opportunity to have a lot of mince pies, to enjoy interactive discussions, to get our 2 hours of CPD. And I'm really hoping that we can take away from this a better way of dealing with dilemmas, both recognising them and deciding how we can act when we're in a bit of a sticky situation. Now, I will be drawing on the videos of professional dilemmas which have been put together by the IFOA, and I'll give you the links at the end for if you want to have a look at more of these videos or indeed show them within your teams back at the office and have further discussions. Just to make sure that we know that nothing that we say is from the Staple Inn Actuarial Society or indeed the IFOA, but actually everything of significance which will be said tonight will come from you in the discussions on the case studies. So this whole session is whatever you make of it. The agenda then is this little introduction from me and then a reminder to us all of our professional requirements to keep ourselves up to date in these matters. A very quick reminder from me on recent developments with the Actuaries Code and other professional guidance. And then we're into the meat of the session. We've chosen four videoed case studies, which I hope you'll enjoy. I mean, they are entertaining in their own right, but I hope you enjoy them for the dilemmas that they portray. And then we'll be having discussion and then feedback. So I think it might be a little bit tricky to award the prize because whatever gets said, you will have come out of your interactive discussion. So I can see at least one of those bottles having to be shared between the groups. So we've got four videos and a little cameo in the middle, if we have time for that, and then our final thoughts. So basically, my job tonight is almost just to keep us to time, to make sure that we have our discussions in the time and we have time to feed back. Everything of note will really come from you. So, first of all, our quick reminder of what our obligations are. reminder there, you will have noticed the reference to 2016-17 sessional year, but nothing has changed, so it just rolls forward onto now. So, in particular, there was a nice reminder of our actuaries code in there, and this slide again just summarises in particular those five principles that exist in the current actuaries code, which you will want to refer to, I think, when you're discussing the various case study scenarios. And of course, as we all know, the actuaries code, it does apply all the time, basically, even when we're not, as we think, acting as actuaries. It would be remiss in anything like tonight's session to forget to mention that the actuaries code has currently been reviewed and revamped and is out there on the IFOA website for us all to look at and respond to. The changes aren't particularly significant. I mean, the code hasn't completely changed, as you might expect anyway. It has become streamlined. Speaking up, the shouting when we see something that we don't think is right, that's now becoming a principle in its own right in the draft document. And there is now a very, very, very comprehensive additional document which has been produced to help us see when the code applies and how to apply it. So I would urge you to have a look at that material. You know, nothing is signed yet, nothing is sealed. You can make changes, but we have only until the 17th of January to voice our feedback. The other things that have happened over the last 6 or so months, a lot of you will know there was the new actuarial professional standards on when and how to apply standards to actuarial work. Particularly, you'll take notice if you do work that's overseas, because it was more geared to that. But very high level. I mean, as you know, all of our guidance these days is very, very high level. So the difficulty is always the judgment of how to apply it and when, etc. Then TAS 100 was released. And most of us will be very familiar with the TASs on data and modelling and reporting, which were all brought together in TAS 100 and some changes made. In particular, it applies to all technical actuarial work. And the devil, obviously, is in deciding sometimes when work is technical actuarial and when it isn't. And to help with this, the IFOA has produced a guidance document. And I do urge you to have a look at that. I think it will answer a lot of the questions that you might have. And I'm afraid, like tonight, we haven't got time to debate the TAS 100 as such. But you will see its relevance with at least one of the case studies. And then, of course, there were the specialist TASs and some caveats or allowances on the pension side. So let us move on to the real business of this evening, which is to look at professional dilemmas, to chat amongst ourselves about what the dilemma is and then maybe how to fix it. So the first one, it is a pension scheme scenario, but please don't be put off if you don't work and never have worked and never want to work in pensions. The background is just that. I'm sure you will see parallels. And we have tried to choose case studies that do come from a variety of areas. Anyway, this is about a pension scheme. As you will see, it's been in a fragile state and still is, but it is continuing. And I think you might quite warm to the chairman, George, who's full of enthusiasm and does get a tad carried away. And then the nice scheme actuary, Sophie, who is having, shall we say, quite a lot of pressure put on her and is rather dropped in a difficult situation. So I'm hoping you will find some humour in this as well. It's not all serious. So what we're going to do is watch the video and then have discussions in smallish groups, as easy as it is when you sat there to turn and talk to five or so other people. And then we'll have feedback. Whatever you say will be fine. You know, there are no completely right answers and no real wrong answers. It is what it is. So, please may we have the video. Do I just click on?
I know, Sophie, I know. But it always seems to be the case when we're dealing with about 100 different things. So, what happened again?
That Skype call this morning with George, the Chair of Trustees, and Bridget, his CEO, it's really thrown my preparation on explaining the funding valuation to the members.
Ah, Sophie, thanks for taking our call. We just wanted to chat something over with you prior to this afternoon's meeting with the members.
Great to speak to you again, Sophie. I never did properly thank you for the great work you did on the recovery plan.
I'm so glad you were pleased with it.
Well, when we had to close the scheme to all new members last year, I naturally feared the worst, but now that's all been sorted, I really want to be the bearer of good news, so to speak. George has an idea, he tells me, the members will really love. So we wanted to run that past you, of course.
Thanks. Although there is still a fair way to go with the recovery plan. But so far so good, I suppose.
Exactly. Just the kind of positive message that we all need to get across at the members' strategy meeting this afternoon. Now, I was thinking, Bridget will open and chair it, naturally. Give some assurance that the benefits will continue to be paid to those reaching 65 and so on. I'll run through how the scheme's recovery measures have strengthened everything up. And then, this is where you come in, Sophie. You'll announce a little-known feature of the scheme that Bridget is sure quite a few of them will be keen to take up.
You're always so good at explaining these types of complicated things to the members. You know, I'm not that good when it comes to the finer details. I'm the big ideas one after all.
OK, so what are you thinking, George?
Well, do you remember the commutation option for retiring members to convert part of their pension into cash? £12 cash for every £1 pension. The same factor it's been for the last 10 years. Not many people realise what great value it is, but if they did, it would really improve, shall we say, the financial status of the scheme. It's a win-win if we get reasonable take-up. The scheme gets more help with its recovery plan, and the member gets a nice tax-free cash lump sum to spend on whatever they'd like. That holiday of a lifetime, a sports car, that kind of thing. Which reminds me, Bridget, how's the Jag?
It's back in the garage. Anyway, Sophie, how about it? It works well for everyone. It's the same factors for both our male and female employees. It's entirely fair. No sex discrimination or anything like that. In fact, it probably seems a bit generous, if anything. I saw a news story the other day about this government chap saying 9-to-1 was good, given the low interest rates.
Maybe. I'm not sure I'd be comfortable presenting on this today, George. You know, we deferred reviewing the 12-to-1 factor last year until the scheme was in a better position. I mean, for a lot of the members, it may not be such good value.
It'd be great, Sophie. There's nothing at all to worry about. Look, at the end of the day, it's their decision. And you're the expert here. We all trust your skills. After all, that's why we employ actuaries, isn't it? To make the complex simple to understand. Anyway, must go.
They said they'd leave it all down to me to sell the commutation option to the scheme members. I mean, for goodness sake, we're only partway through the recovery plan. It's still very fragile.
Really? Why is George so keen on that?
Well, you know George, always trying to put a positive spin on the scheme, despite everything it's been through recently. Besides, his CEO Bridget is at this meeting, and George is out to impress her. Giving scheme members more flexibility to take their pension to suit their retirement lifestyle and all that. It's all part of Bridget's employee choice initiative, evidently. Plus, they provide a free buffet lunch prior to the meeting, and when does he ever miss one of those?
So this 12-to-1 cash commutation factor, are you happy with it? I mean, it's the old standard factor from the 1990s, isn't it?
That's right, and it wasn't great value even then.
Sophie, you know that a fair factor for a healthy retiree at 65 would be £20 or £25 at the moment.
Yes, I know. But we had significantly bigger issues to sort out last year, so obviously it all got put to one side.
And you'll remember those figures that you showed me when you did the valuation last month. If we commutated the pensions at 20 to 1, the existing shortfall would increase from 5 to 20 million.
Bridget and George would love that.
Yes, I know that too. Thanks.
Well, hopefully it won't be a big point. There's so much else to explain in respect of the valuation result.
Ah, Sophie, Harry, you've arrived. Please, please come in. As I was saying, Alice, the scheme has an amazing special option to allow retiring members to convert part of your pension into cash. It's incredibly generous. £12 of cash for every £1 of pension you give up. And it's entirely tax-free. The taxman doesn't get a penny. You could finally enjoy that Caribbean cruise you've always talked about. But now that Sophie's here, I'll pass over to our expert. Commutation is just such a great option. Sophie, the floor is yours. We're all dying to hear your view.
To help us focus, we've put together just a few questions. Now, you don't need to be restricted to these questions, but they probably do give us a nice framework. So what do you think Sophie's concerns are? What are her options? What would you do? And what might Sophie and the rest of us learn from this? So we've got about 7 minutes. I know I'm being quite precise with the timing, but you need me to get this right so that we get our 2 hours of work. 7 or so minutes for discussion. So if you can get yourself into groups, you don't need to move the chairs, but if you manage to shuffle up so there are about 5 or 6 of you talking, have a chat, and then we'll do some feedback. We will have mics, by the way, for the feedback, because this room is not the best for acoustics. Okay. Shall we start the feedback? It's fine to stay where you are, because I think we maybe will keep these groups throughout the evening. So I know there are mics, which it might be a good idea to use, or at least let's start off using them. If we end up being able to just huddle around with each other, that'll be fine. Who would like to start us off then? What do we think Sophie's concerns will be as she stood there having been dropped in it? So if you just raise your hand and the mic will miraculously appear.
Get a champagne up for offer.
Hi, we discussed this and we thought Sophie's concern, like her primary concern, would be giving advice or stating that the option presented is good, whereas that's not necessarily the case given the conversation that was portrayed that she had in the elevator. And secondly, obviously, that by giving that advice, she'd be in breach of the ACTRES code, professionalism standards and everything. And that she's kind of being railroaded, if I may say so, to be giving that advice to the group. And that may not necessarily be her place to do that either.
Thank you. Any other group want to add to Sophie's concerns? So we've had the advice that the advice she might give, that she'd be unhappy about giving the advice. Would it be competent? That she's been put under pressure. Anything else?
Oh, I think she ought to be wondering who the client is here, whether she's acting for the trustee or acting for the company, which seems to be a big difference. And if anyone is going to go down that route, where the money's going to come from, whether the investments are in the right place, what the impact is on the remaining people, all need to be sort of thought about and discussed.
Okay, so knowing her client and also the investment implications or aspects of the issue.
And also the position could vary considerably depending where people are and where the PPF comes in, because that would provide protection for people as well if there's issues about sponsors' covenant within all of it.
Right. Yeah, lovely. Thank you. Anything else? What about Sophie as a person?
I think, so your question's about what around her as a person in this context, yeah, and her behaviour. Yeah. I think the key observation from my perspective is the lack of action between the Skype call and turning up in the room and having the problem pushed upon her. And there's a lack of appreciation there that when you have concerns, they typically gather momentum and become harder to stop. A lot of these things are problems that other people have interpreted in a certain way, you've interpreted in a different way. They go on their course of action and set other sequences of events occurring in a chain reaction, and they become harder to stop down the line. So as a person, I think, firstly, her level of assertion is very low on the call, and her willingness to stop the train between the call and the meeting just isn't there.
Yeah.
And she needs to act on both of those.
Yeah, lovely. Yes, I mean, keeping a client happy, there are limits, aren't there, to all of this. Moving on then to Sophie's options, who would like to start us off on those? Given where she is, you know, she's in the meeting room, she is having to open her mouth and talk, what we think. What are her options?
Guys, if you can just start by giving your name and your status.
Hi, my name is Mark Wolfis. I'm a student. Our discussion was about Sophie's options in terms of balancing the client's expectations as well as the members, in terms of whether they're getting fair value or whether they're very clear about what this commutation option is all about. So one of the ideas that was brought in was to make sure that maybe it's better for her to be quite technical in terms of what that commutation option is about, but also having very clear caveats about what that means for members in terms of where they are. Are they quite far from retirement? Are they approaching retirement? And whether they need to take steps in terms of what this option means for them, whether they need to take financial advice, but be very clear and signpost the members about what this option is about. Because I think her concerns was about the expectation that she needs to do the hard sell for the option, when actually her responsibility is just to make sure that she's explained this option properly to the members. So I think there's a clear difference between what she's having as her expectation with actually as a scheme actuary. The reality is she just needs to explain what this option is about.
Okay, lovely. So you've seen a way through for her. Any other group want to add something different or comment on that?
Thank you. Paul Collins, I'm too old for any of these prizes, I'm afraid. I think we felt it was important she didn't stray into being seen to be given any investment advice and to stay very factual in what she was presenting. So I think that was, so I echo what the previous speaker was saying on that. We also were quite concerned about the factor being very out of date. And we felt that one option for her would be to how best to present the fact that this hasn't been reviewed for a large number of years. It would appear to be poor value. Although, of course, there are wider issues like if the scheme itself is very weak, then maybe you're better taking your money and running. But she has to present that as a factual position rather than trying to advise people in either direction, and perhaps in particular highlight that they should seek an independent financial advice before taking up with the option.
Lovely, thank you. Other comments include what do you think George is going to think when she gives this nice factual account and raises a few more issues?
Hi, Mahima. I'm a fellow of the Institute. One of the options that Sophie had would possibly take into account what Mark would think is the way she could approach the meeting would be, well, commutation could be a potential option, but I don't have any recently calculated figures to tell you about the viability of the option, but it may be good depending on what you get. So in that way, she's clearly caveated the fact that a 12 to 1 may not be the best option. And if she says it in a nice-ish manner, her boss would be happy enough, I guess. And if he is not, she can always pick that with him later, saying, you didn't give me a chance to talk. Although it's that, again, like someone said earlier, it's that lack of information or her action between the Skype conversation and the meeting that makes it difficult to decide whether she was lacking in her initiative or whether there was hardly any time between those two events happening for her to take any initiative as well.
Thank you. There was another gentleman just a bit further up who was...
Yeah, Robin Holmes. I think if Sophie makes it clear that she's not actually authorised to give financial advice to members, that hopefully gets her off the hook with her client. And she's clearly at fault, so she didn't explain that to him earlier. But I think if she does explain that, that helps with both the members and her client.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So wrapping some of this up together then, what would we do? You can step back a bit from being in the meeting room. What might you have done earlier and then in the meeting room?
Hi, so I think if I'd been in her shoes, I'd probably have had more of an audit trail right from the start. So coming out of that original meeting that she had, if she wasn't happy with what her boss had told her to do, probably followed it up with an email just so she had it in writing at least. And in the meeting, even though she was in a tricky situation in the fact that she was managing various stakeholders, I'd probably, on the one hand, want to keep my boss happy and therefore mention what he had said, but also state to trustees that given this is quite a material thing to be discussing, I'd follow it up with some written documentation, and in there I'd provide like a list of limitations and a list of uncertainties, and just state this is still very much initial thoughts and draft, and therefore we will need an extra discussion. I don't think that the final decision should be made in that one meeting where she was literally just put there randomly and just told you have to talk about it there. So I think she needs to buy more time.
Okay, lovely. So trying to stop it at the beginning and then being reasonably careful what's said at the meeting. Any other views for what you would do?
It's Paul O'Connor, fellow. I actually think I disagree slightly with some of the views being raised about what you can do in that situation, because giving a view with some caveats is still, it's quite a material context, and giving a view is potentially pretty damaging. I think the only option and what I would try to do is defer the conversation entirely. So at the time of the Skype call, it's being more assertive, or if you've missed that chance, it's, even if you end up in the meeting room, making it clear that unfortunately you can't give advice at this point in time. It may be true. You want to not cast a negative view on the chairman, but you still want to say it may be true, but unfortunately we haven't been able to do the work for this meeting. Mm-hmm. You can maybe offer to follow up with written advice afterwards, but you just can't give a draft view.
Okay. No, good point. And there was a gentleman at the front.
Hi, my name's Tim Wong. I'm a fellow. So I think what I'd do is, well, it appears one of Sophie's concerns is being asked to sell something as good value, which she doesn't think is good value. As various people have already touched on, I think the way we can get around that is by being factual, is by being completely neutral about it. I think it's a good thing to highlight to members that, that they can do this, and I don't think there's anything wrong with doing so. The other thing she's uncomfortable about, the way I would tackle it is... being asked to provide a view on whether 12.5 as a commutation factor is good value or not, I think I would get around that by using that number as an illustration, i.e. if you have £20,000 of pension a year, how much does that mean you can take out, and then state that it's got to be reviewed, there's a lot of work to be done, and then obviously they need to consult they need to take professional advice before making a decision.
Any final points for us or Sophie to learn from this dilemma?
My name is Andrew Mitchell, and I'm a fellow. One other thing we thought in the time between the initial call and the meeting, Sophie would probably benefit a lot from being able to consult with a more senior colleague. Just get advice and talk it over. Whereas in the film, she just seemed to sort of consult her, a more junior colleague.
Yeah, good point. So a lot of things, I mean, I hope we're not in this situation, but we probably have been in situations not that dissimilar where the conversation starts going in a certain direction that we're uncomfortable with. And I think you have made it clear that you can stick to the facts, but still be careful, because whatever you're saying could be very much viewed as advice or you being comfortable with something that you actually aren't. Let's move on to a very contemporary setting now, where we have our two main actuaries who have set up an app-based insurance company. So this might be the idea of dreams for some of you. The launch date is coming up, and we meet them when they're discussing their plans, and they're going to be discussing their solid plans with the regulator. So if we could have the next. Thank you.
Still original, a bit creaky. So it's two white coffees, isn't it?
Perfect.
One a decaf soya latte without the cara frappe blends, please, Sonia.
I've got no idea what that means, but I'll see what I can do.
And apologies again that Mr. Richardson is running behind. He should be about another 10 minutes. Meanwhile, please make yourself comfortable.
We'll have an office like this soon enough, Mac. Beautiful. They don't make them like this anymore. Even in a traditional old building like this, technology still finds its way in. Tradition and innovation collide. Not too unlike our app.
I like to think our app's a little bit more cutting edge than a desk phone, Kiwi. It's a brave new world now. We don't have time for stuffy tradition, especially when the launch is so close. Anyway, this meeting with the regulator, you have briefed Mr. Richardson on what we're doing with the app, how the technology collects personal data to price the policies, etc.
Of course. It's just a rubber stamped exercise today. Don't worry. We'll have the license through in the next couple of months, and then it's all systems go.
It'd better be. Suddenly, there seems to be loads more ideas out there that are similar to ours. We need to sell some policies soon to keep the investors happy. And this next round of funding depends on it.
It's fine, Mac. It's all in hand. They'll probably just tell us to be aware of the regulatory developments coming up in the next 18 months. But by then, we'll have been brought up by one of the big boys, and then they can sort it all out. We still haven't chatted about how you got on at your meeting yesterday with the social media aggregator.
All good, actually. Sign the heads or turns. They loved the app. They sent me an email afterwards and described it as, and I quote, truly breaking the boundaries of how personal data can be used in an unobtrusive manner to save money without the user even realising it. See, Kiwi, a genuine win-win for everyone, and you've seen the kind of data fees they can send us. It's mind-blowing. Especially that it's all in the public domain too, making it totally above board.
I don't think I'll ever get over about just how much people are willing to share on their social media.
That's an understatement. You'd never catch me sharing a fraction of what they post. Photographing salads and telling the world where they are at all times. But that's the way life is now. And if they're relaxed about it, it's only going to make our job easier, and that's all that matters.
Well, they do get better insurance premiums out of it. I mean, at the end of the day, you don't get something for nothing. We all know that. It's like the more data we can gather on you, the more you'll end up saving.
Spot on. I like that. And it's just the start, really. Imagine using the same technology in the app to cross-sell pet insurance to the same person solely based on the animal photos that they post online. It's a huge market, pet insurance. We should talk about that.
And when we really get going, we can use the app's AI capabilities to analyse their social interactions with friends and then cross-sell even further.
All in return for cheaper premiums. Who wouldn't like that?
Mm-hmm. Are you sure? I said, are you sure?
What?
Of course, in my day, things were a lot simpler, I suppose. None of this interweb thingy. But the principles are essentially the same. Am I correct?
Times do change. Things move on, like in any profession. It's nothing illegitimate or illegal that we're doing here.
Oh, certainly, well, that may well be the case. But is it entirely ethical? Sounds just a little bit like snooping to me.
Hello? Hello? Kiwi, did that really just happen?
I think. I don't know.
Hello there. Sorry to keep you. I'm sure Sonia's looked after you and made you comfortable.
Two coffees. Bless you.
Now, how about you tell me all about this app?
us for 10 this time are, first of all, are there any regulatory requirements that you are aware of which might help in our discussions, if not the two actuaries? But more importantly, are there any moral or ethical issues here in this dilemma? And importantly, what would you advise the two actuaries to do? So if we can just take 5 minutes in our groups to bash through some of this and then regroup and share our thoughts. Thank you. Okay, let's see what ideas we came up with then. I don't mean to rush us, by the way, but I would like us to see the four videos if we can. You can always go back and relook at them, and in fact, there's discussion points on all of them as of videos as well, which, you know, if you really want to do it to death, you can do that. So, first of all, the regulatory requirements. Anybody think of any regulation which really applied to this situation? Yes, there's somebody in the middle. Thank you.
Emma, to your left.
Hello, Martin Lannan. Well, clearly they are either providing insurance, or at least they're broking insurance that's provided for someone else, so they're regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority, and that seems to be the purpose of their having their meeting, so that, you know, they're engaging with that in the correct way. We also talked a lot about data protection and the issues around the new general data protection regulations registry something, and the fact that, you know, we all know, or most of us, I suspect, know that when we download an app, we tick lots of boxes saying, can you look at everything on my phone? And you wonder why in the earth and world it's doing that. But so they've presumably worked with lawyers to try and work that out. Perhaps they haven't worked with lawyers, but I mean, if they haven't, then I suspect that I hope that the people who are providing them with funding would have failed them on due diligence grounds. But
Thank you. Thank you. We did just want to flag that there is some proper legislation and regulation that we'd have to be aware of. But importantly for our course today, the moral and ethical issues, what did we think about those? Ooh, now there's somebody at the back and then there's somebody on the other side near the front.
Hi, it's Anika, fellow. I think our main thing is, although we didn't really like the idea of it, so taking that out of it, the main kind of ethical issues would come about if they were being secretive or not completely open about how they were pricing the insurance and where the data was from. But then the flip side of that is if they were completely honest and open about how they were pricing premiums, and it, on the basis it's not completely just factual information but subjective information, then you've also got moral hazard issues in actually pricing the insurance and people playing the system. So, but whilst we didn't like it, I think if you're completely honest about what you're doing and it is an option and it's an app that people are choosing to use, then it's hard to say it's not ethical. It might not be nice. But
okay, so transparency, moral hazard. Gentleman at the front. Sorry, Emma, this is your exercise for the week.
Hi, yeah, so we had a kind of different take on that. So we were considering that if you did something such as machine learning and teach something to try and do some ratings of things that on a set of fluid criteria, there's a lot of risk of ending up with unintended discrimination. So the machine learning might pick out certain things from photos or certain trends and then end up rating things in a way that you wouldn't consciously set out to do by something that we wouldn't normally rate by. We also, there's hidden issues that actually trends could be identified that were unintended, so that people may post a certain picture or a certain comment, and that actually would create an unintended or unconscious bias that might linger with them for a long time and distort their pricing or distort their experience of the product. So we felt that was quite a risk when you were starting out if you didn't have a clear framework and data set to try and inform how to steer those decisions and monitor them.
Right, so you saw more problems, yeah. Any other group with...
Hi, my name is Anna, I'm a student. Another ethical or moral ethical issue that they could be facing is the case where someone doesn't have a particularly extensive social media presence, and how would they go about rating that person? They've sort of mentioned many a times in the video that providing more data will give you a lower premium, and there's a big concern there because that data could show that you're a worse risk, and they needed to have flagged that at some point. And people also shouldn't be penalized for not not having that data out there. There's also another problem if they collect so much data that they have sort of over-segmentation in their pricing, where some people will just flat out be denied insurance that they wouldn't necessarily be aware of at the point of filling out the quote or saying, yes, you can look at my data, which is also something that would need to be covered off.
So again, some problems there. Any last group on these issues? At the back of the room. And near the front as well. And then we'll move on.
There might be a question. There might be issues around data storage as well. Because if they're using a machine learning algorithm to pick up on trends from social media to identify pricing factors, they might have to store that data in the meantime till the analysis is complete, which may be not only not ethical, but it might also be illegal, because it might be legal to access the data but not to store the data, which they'll have to do on their, say, cloud-based platform. Okay.
Thank you. And then the last group at the front with the last of the problems for now. Anyway, you probably adjourned more over the drinks later.
Roger Hill, a fellow. I just wondered if they'd talk to the provider of the actual social media data about what they were using it for.
Right.
Because I think they would want to know that if they found that the people using social media were unable to get insurance because of what they said, I think they'd be rather unhappy.
So, a whole host of problems, and no doubt you came up with some more. So what would you advise these two actuaries to do? Any group get that far and be brave enough to tell us? Thank you. So at the front and near the back. Yeah.
Owen Griffiths Fellow. We said it, I think, following on what we mentioned before, you'd need a robust framework for trying to build this up and understand how you were going to drive it, where you would let it run free, where you wouldn't. We also considered that you'd perhaps want to start simple, so start with a simpler product, simpler landscape that's something that you had some expertise in or had a relationship with that you could then build up on and expand the platform, rather than perhaps charging in on lots of different product lines with lots of complex rating factors straight away, so that you could kind of track its ethical journey and make sure it was sensible.
Okay, thank you. So that ties in with the first ideas from the back, which were just be transparent about what you're doing, but not quash it. Lovely.
Paul O'Connor Fellow. I actually think there's a slightly less scientific piece of advice here, which is sometimes these things come down to common sense and what you would feel comfortable with. What would you feel comfortable selling to your family members, to your friends? What would you want to shift to them? And would you feel comfortable doing that? Because actually, it's a pretty murky legal and regulatory area. One thing we talked about in a lot of detail was, for example, credit scoring and the fact that that's used pretty widely in personal lines at the moment. To some extent, there are a lot of similarities between social media data, credit scoring data. So there's no fine line necessarily from a regulatory perspective or a legal perspective. So ultimately, I think it probably comes down to slightly more emotional and self-questioning integrity points.
Okay, thank you. Obviously, that was a meaty one, and thank you for especially those who were able to put in some of the technical detail that is needed in addition to the more general ethical and moral issues. I think this is definitely one that you might want to chat over the sandwiches and drinks later on. Because the discussions are going so well, do you mind if I just skip over my quick scenario, which isn't as good as some of the videos, and move on to a dilemma in the context of HR issues? We have tried to pick different contexts, so there might be something in there for us all to really identify with in our day lives at work. So we'll meet Ryan having his probation period review and some really quite reasonably amusing interchanges with his boss.
particularly about his timekeeping. And then, of course, he having been criticised, he starts to talk. So that is where we join our team.
Hi, sorry if I'm a few minutes early, but I know you've got a train to catch this afternoon.
No, not at all, Brian. Please, come in, take a seat.
A bit of light reading, I see.
Just some reference materials for an upcoming meeting. Anyway, your six-month probationary assessment. Well, first of all, I want to say, Ryan, that you've made a very good impression in the actuarial department. You've only been here 6 months, but you've certainly settled in nicely. You're working very hard, and we're all quite pleased about that.
Well, that's good news. Needless to say, I've really enjoyed working for the company. And, well, I certainly haven't been short of things to do.
Well, it was an exceptionally busy time of year that you joined us.
Absolutely. I feel like I've hit the ground running. I can't believe it's been 6 months.
I'm glad you brought that up specifically, Ryan. As I say, overall, I am quite happy with your performance, and you have done some sterling work. But if there was anything I felt compelled to discuss in a little more detail, I would probably have to single out timekeeping.
Timekeeping? I didn't realise that was an issue. I'm always punctual. I can't think of a day when I've been late.
I don't mean at the beginning of the day so much, more when it's time to leave.
I leave around 5 each day.
Precisely.
I'm sorry, I'm not really sure I follow what's going on.
It's possible it escaped your attention, but the rest of your department don't watch the clock quite as closely as you seem to. Only an observation.
Well, you say that, but you obviously feel strong enough to make a point of discussion in my probationary appraisal. Unless I'm really misunderstanding the situation.
You're quite quick to leave your desk at the end of the day, that's all. And it can appear slightly against the flow when your colleagues regularly commit 1, sometimes 2, additional hours at the end of the working day in order to ensure that the work is getting done.
How are you finding the book?
Pardon me?
The Manager's Handbook by Gail Martin. I noticed that you were reading it as I came in. Come across anything useful?
Well, I don't really.
One of my favourite quotes is towards Chapter 5, My Working Week. No employee should be expected to work longer hours in order to cover up their own manager's failings.
I hope you're not implying that any missed deadlines are my fault.
Well, I wouldn't know. It's just that in the 6 months that I've been working here, we haven't missed any deadlines. Or at least, I haven't. I take a great deal of pride in my work, Elizabeth, and I also take it upon myself to learn as much as I can about my work in order to do it in the most efficient way possible.
And that's why you read Gail Martin management guides, I suppose.
More than that, I've attended the workshop.
Workshop?
Mm-hmm. Gail Martin's one-to-one business workshop. I learned a remarkable amount of effective professional practice. And, to be honest, if there's one thing I feel really strongly about, it's that I shouldn't have to remain at my desk past leaving time when all my work's done.
Well, you clearly feel that you spent exactly the required amount of time you need to spend on your work during the day, Ryan. But this is more a question of support. Supporting your colleagues, supporting the team, supporting your department.
Insisting that people stay longer than their contracted hours is, if you'll forgive me, unprofessional. And that's clearly outlined in the actuary's code.
I'm not sure that's what it says. Look, the fact is, workloads are increasing year on year, but our team numbers are not. Some people in the team have been unable to cope with the extra work and have been needing to stay late, rushing to meet deadlines.
Rushing? Well, surely there's a bigger question. I mean, why are they rushing? And how do we know that all this extra time spent at their desks is yielding high-quality work to standards? As Gail Martin said to me, there is no point in paying your employees a high salary unless you're actually stopping and giving them time to think about their work.
You think quite highly of Gail Martin, don't you, Ryan?
Well, she thinks quite highly of me. A solid professional with a firm grasp of efficient business practice, she told me.
then you would do well to consider your colleagues and begin applying that. You know, I didn't feel the need to raise it before, but the work that you submitted on the business plan...
I know what I handed in probably seemed controversial, but it's my job to identify these realistic forecasts. And it's common knowledge that the business plan as it stands is, well, extremely optimistic.
We did go over this in detail, didn't we? The company is resolute in working towards a consistent approach, and it's obviously difficult to do that when your assumptions differ so greatly. We spent a great deal of time as a team working with the project that agreed the business plan in the first place. That's why it was advised that you simply stick to the business plan as agreed.
I'm sorry, but that really doesn't make a lot of sense. I did an exceptional amount of work on that submission. Pages of substantial data, only to find that it wasn't even implemented in the final report. I didn't even get invited to the committee meeting where all this was probably discussed at great length. It's unprofessional to exclude any employee who did the work from ultimately seeing how that work is being used.
Gail Martin.
The New Manager's Handbook. By Gail Martin.
Look, Ryan, you're a passionate employee.
I mean, how could I not be invited to such an important meeting?
Ryan!
My previous company would have never allowed such a...
Well,
a thing
maybe
to
you'd like to consider returning to your previous company. We have procedures here. Procedures that must be followed. The committee holds the meeting, they decide the outcome, I report it to the team. And make no mistake, the CEO has been very clear on the level of detail he expects. We need to be brief and to the point, even if that doesn't fit your view of the standards required. I do feel compelled to ask, Ryan. Your methods are quite meticulous, and I'm sure they've been perfectly suited to previous posts you've held. So why did you actually feel the need to leave your previous position 6 months ago?
Well, this seemed like a really well-organised company, and the rise in pay was an attractive prospect. And Gail Martin advised me to seek a role that was more fitting for a professional of my calibre, to look for a company that would appreciate my skills and hard-working values.
She said that. Well, I'll have to ask her about that. Now, you'll have to excuse me, Ryan. I do have a train to catch.
Sorry, you're going to... What?
Gail Martin. I'm attending one of her management masterclasses this weekend, and I'm very much looking forward to mentioning your name when I see her. Let's continue our chat on Monday morning, shall we?
So... I thought you might quite like seeing Sophie in a slightly different role, but so we did use the same actors for a few different videos. So points possibly to consider then, what could Elizabeth have done differently? Do we think Ryan was right? Do we think he should change his approach? And if you were this Gail Martin, this Wonder Woman, what would you advise Elizabeth to do in this situation? So again, if you take about 5 minutes or so to have a think about the issues, that would be good. So, 5 minutes is up. And let's have a look at our three questions. So, who would like to start us off on what Elizabeth could have done differently, if anything? Near the back. Oh, sorry. And then near the back.
Julian Lee. I think if there are concerns about what's happening with an employee during a probationary period, you ought to discuss it with him or her during that probationary period and probably less formally. It's a bit late once you get to that sort of stage. So it's not what she should have done differently at that time. It's what she should have done differently over the previous 6 months.
Okay, yeah, thank you. There was a contribution from near the back of the room.
Katie Hicks, I'm a student. Our group agreed very much with the previous comment that it should have been raised sooner. We thought that she raised it in an incredibly passive-aggressive way. I think other people agree. And that she only grew more passive-aggressive and attacking as he provided his defense of his position, which was not very professional, really, of her. Okay. She was letting her emotions take over rather than considering the situation from his point of view. And the other thing we were thinking of is, well, we thought of several other things, but why had they not hired anyone else if you have the rest of the team consistently doing an hour or two, extra every day? They were clearly short-staffed.
Good point. Yes, thank you. Anyone else? Yes, there's lots of hands. So it's on there, and then on this side, please.
Hi, I'm Anna. I'm a student. Since the situation in the video have escalated as much as we've seen, I guess, that Elizabeth should have made more of an emphasis on the point that being a team player is a big part of the organization's culture. And they seem to be having a misunderstanding what output is being valued. Ryan thought that it was the keeping up with the deadlines and producing high-quality reports, where Elizabeth potentially thought that it was being a team player and providing the support, and she should have made that point much clearer to him so they're not comparing output on different criteria.
Okay, no, good point, thank you. So on this side of the room, then, there were... I think still some additional points.
Our discussion went on with where Elizabeth was focusing on in terms of that discussion. I think Elizabeth focused more on the actions of Ryan, i.e. going on time, rather than having a conversation regarding his performance and that if he's managing to meet deadlines and finish on time, I think Elizabeth should have gone on the approach of probing whether Ryan was actually being a team player, knowing that his colleagues are working longer and putting on those extra hours. Has it done anything in terms of reaching out to the other members of the team, in terms of maybe taking on more work? And if he could do that on top of finishing on time, then Elizabeth may have reasonably expected that actually he's fulfilling his roles. I think Elizabeth just focused on him not being in tune with the culture of the team. I think in terms of, rather than Elizabeth focusing and being argumentative about what Ryan's not doing, maybe she should have focused more on what Ryan could do on top of what his actions are.
So a much more positive spin on the teamwork aspect. Yeah, thank you. And there was the gentleman behind you, but it might be... No, yes, thank you. Yes.
Chu Chen, fellow. I think there's a couple points. I think the main point here is not Elizabeth think leaving on time is a bad thing because she just left afterwards. So clearly that's not a problem. The problem here is she thinks Ryan is not a team player or not appear to be a team player, which is have a negative spin for her team as well for everybody else. So she could have, like people said before, take a positive spin on it. Mm-hmm. Things like she could offload more work from someone else in the team to Ryan in the first place. And from the way Ryan works, Ryan probably will take on the job very happily. Mm. Also, the other point in within our team discuss is the main point here is Ryan is using a different assumption compared to every other team member. That's probably a more major point compared to being leave early. Yeah. Or not even leave early, being leave on time. So that would be a better starting point to discuss.
Yes, I see what you mean. And he's happy to go out on a limb. So, for them, Ryan, focusing on him, do we really think he should change his approach?
I'm Ajit Goral and I'm also a fellow. So, I think with his approach, he came across as if he was entitled to go to these board meetings. And I think rather than going with that approach, he should have instead said, okay, for the next 6 months, I'd rather that my objective was that, given that I do a lot of the work, I'd like if I could attend or if I had more of an involvement when it came to that kind of stuff. So I think the way he came across should be different, and rather than just saying, I need to do this, it's unprofessional, you're not letting me, he should just say, okay, with the job, this is what I'd like to get out of it.
So much more, again, being positive rather than aggressive and negative. Anything else on Ryan? We happy with him just working his contractual hours? Is there anything wrong with that?
I think the way he kept using the word unprofessional every time and throwing it back in her face, it almost felt like he was throwing that back in her face, whereas it's not necessarily unprofessional. It might be what's expected of you to get things over the line and help the rest of the team. There's nothing wrong with working 9 to 5 as long as you're meeting expectations and the expectations aren't extremely out of bounds. But at the same time, I think in any team, there's that whole concept of teamwork. If there are people who are consistently working overtime, because it might be that different people have different roles, and if their product or their work is more than others, it might be good to just help and get that helping hand.
Okay, so that brings us nicely on what would we advise Elizabeth to do now?
Hi, I'm Sonia and I'm a fellow. I mean, I think there's a huge communication issue here. So I think what she should probably do is really set out, whether it's through email communication or like a role description of what she expects. And even at a everyday sort of level, setting out every day when she gives them a task, what she expects.
Thank you. Anyone else? Along there, and then two gentlemen on the other side, in the middle.
Hi, I'm Emily and I'm a student. I think the biggest thing she could do is to give him regular feedback, because it seems like him and her have very different expectations and they both think the other one is unprofessional. And if they had kind of regular feedback sessions, then they'd be able to kind of air out their differences in advance and he would know what the expectations were. She would be aware of what he was thinking, and then hopefully you wouldn't kind of get this escalation, because it seems like at the moment, you know, when she said, oh, why don't you go back to where you worked before, that kind of thing's going to really kind of damage the working relationship between them. Mm-hmm. And going forward, you know, having a member of staff who feels really aggrieved probably is going to make them less productive. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, that'll probably ensure that there's kind of no bad feelings and that perhaps he knows more what he needs to do. Although obviously she needs to keep a really close eye on him, because he has this really strong view that he's definitely getting his work done. And if he's not, then she needs to obviously get feedback from other team members so she can give him examples of where he's not meeting her expectations so he can improve in the future.
Thank you. Two, maybe three contributions on this side, and then we would need to move on. So,
hi. I think first and foremost, I'd advise Elizabeth to diffuse the situation. So immediately after that, she needs to try as much as possible to take emotion out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. For a couple of reasons. One, sort of speaking to impartiality, it's very rarely productive to have conversations like that, which are so full of emotion. It's not really the place. But secondly, and possibly more importantly, just friendliness. It's rarely okay to have really negative conversations like that with someone that you spend all of your time with. And regardless of her views on right or wrong, ultimately, as the manager in the situation, it's her job to return things to a civil frame of reference.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any brief comments then? There was just this gentleman at the front, and then we will need to move on. Yes, this gentleman at the front, please, who hasn't spoken.
Ian McKee, I qualified some while back, I think. I think the thinking about what I've just been watching, my personal view is that they're possibly both being a bit unprofessional to the extent that neither is really listening to the other. You know, we've talked about what people say, but actually it was a non-discussion because one was busy saying what they were saying and the other was saying what they were saying, but they weren't really listening to each other. And I think that is probably the most important point from that.
Mm, thank you. And that's something that hasn't been raised before in these videos, so thank you. We are going to stick to the sort of staff management, team working theme. I think because maybe for some of us older people in the room, we always, years ago, used to think professionalism was about doing the sums right, you know, and getting the advice right, which of course it is about that. But the softer side is just as important, and I think having this focus on that, and to make our, you know, think about things that maybe we haven't thought about in that quite that way is always useful. So we meet Peter, and he's moved into a new team. He is struggling to fit in, so we've got the team aspect again. He comes up with a great idea, or it seems like a great idea, for managing currency risk. Which his boss then presents, and he's a little bit upset.
Right. I can't keep doing this every morning. I'll just walk up to the kitchen, laugh at whatever they're laughing at, and go by and interject with some witty comment. No. Bad idea. So what's the answer? Sit here staring at them every day? No input? No banter? Forever the new boy. I hope Fern might have got me involved in the team a bit more by now. She seemed like a cool boss at my interview.
Oh, I believe Fern.
It's now or never, new boy. Go over there, this second. Or just throw all your big bright ideas into the bin. Quick, Peter. They're dispersing.
That's what I was going to say.
Honestly, an office football team managed by Fern. Could you imagine?
We'd have Versace away kits and Italian leather boots.
What?
I don't know. So are we starting an office football team then?
Oh, no. Maria and I were actually just talking about the match last night. A boring second half, but us lots seem to have a laugh no matter what.
Even when it's freezing, Cal? You didn't fancy it, Peter?
Yeah. No. No, I mean, I didn't get an invitation. Oh. Maybe they were sent out before I started.
Well, probably, but we're always arranging stuff like that, so there'll be other opportunities, I'm sure. How are you doing anyways, Peter? We haven't had time to have a proper sit-down chat since you joined the team.
Really good, thanks, yeah. I know we've got this meeting at the end of the week, so I'm really looking forward to getting some feedback on these ideas I've had.
Oh, anyone for a brew?
Yes, please.
Yes, please. No, thank you.
Well, it depends on the idea, really. I recommend taking anything you have and putting it into a written-up proposal. Sometimes things can get lost or cut short during a meeting, so you might just submit it to Fern. She's really good at spotting a good idea. What do you think, Cal?
Hmm. That sounds like a lot of work for every idea I have.
Sounds like a bit more than I expected, but it's always good to be thorough.
Always good to be thorough, especially with details. Fern loves the details. What's the idea anyway?
Ah, well, actually, I'm glad I can see you in the kitchen because I really want to talk to you about this. I've got this really good idea, okay? It's going to be great.
Peter! Some morning coffee, I think. Unless I just disturbed your morning wall-staring meditation.
No.
Not to worry. I always brag on the golf course that I've got the hardest working team in the field. I like it when I'm right.
Right, I better go catch up with Cal about this client that we were discussing.
Oh, you better be quick. You almost ran out of here with the last two croissants.
By the way, I left a proposal in your tray last night.
Currency risk.
I can't believe it. She's read it already.
Yeah, just some ideas I've been excited about.
I knew you'd fit in nicely here, Peter. You see, you're a good ideas man. Just the sort of asset I want on my team.
See, Petey? Putting the hours, the effort, and the results take care of themselves. You'll definitely get invited to the next get-together.
I already had this idea, though, sadly.
Sorry, what?
Discussed it in a meeting last week. But you see what I mean, though? Great minds and all that. Feel free to submit anything else you might think of.
Peter, is your email fixed now? I sent you that agenda this morning.
For the finance committee? Yeah, I'm just reading it now, actually. I'm just a bit confused by the... Wait, what?
Does it look okay?
Don't overreact.
Now, don't overreact, Peter. Let's just take a breath and calmly explain to me once more. Now, what's the problem?
Fern, when I submitted my currency risk proposal to you the other day, you turned it down. So you can imagine it's come as a bit of a colossal surprise to find it here, in the Finance Committee agenda. Reviewed by Maria. Authored by Cal. And sponsored by...
You might just want to think back to what I actually said.
You turned it down. I mean, all of that work and you... You just turned it down.
No. What I said to you was that I'd had a very similar idea and I'd discussed that idea with the team in a meeting that same week before, coincidentally, you submitted an almost identical proposal without so much as discussing it with me first, I might add. Perhaps if you'd run it by me, I could have saved you a lot of time and energy.
With the exact same figures that I stated in my detailed proposal, the £150 million reduction in reserve to the exact same process I had in my notes. Come on, Fern, surely you can see how all this seems a bit...
Don't say it.
You know, it just seems a bit... underhand.
You're done. You're out of there. Game over.
Peter, I know it can be difficult getting used to a new team and everything that comes with that, but you're part of a team now and we all work together and we all reap the rewards.
I know, but it just seems
now,
like I can't help feeling that...
I'm willing to put this down to experience if you are. It's unfortunate, yes, but underhand. I'd like us to put this behind us now, Peter. Go, celebrate with the team, plan another outing. This is a shared triumph for us all, and the first of many, now that you're on board, I'm sure.
Tread carefully, Peter. You'd better be 100% certain she's pulling a fast one before you get yourself in any deeper.
Come on, Peter. It's not like we stole your idea. It was a coincidence.
Fern just handed me a bunch of notes and asked Cal and I to work on it. I'm sure she didn't include you because you're still quite new to the team. You'd have a lot on your plate and...
I told you my idea. In detail. Cal, you were there too. What, you didn't think it sounded a tiniest bit familiar when you first started working on it?
I can't really remember. Maybe a tiny bit. But why would Fern take credit for someone else's work? It was a good idea.
It was a great idea.
Apparently, it was an outstanding idea.
What?
When you two teammates are done bickering, you might want to check this email we've just had through from the committee. And so, we at the FALM committee have made the majority decision to not only proceed with immediately implementing the newly proposed outline for currency risk...
But we are very pleased to confirm that we are considering the project sponsor for an esteemed reward, Mrs.
Fern Molina.
Points, questions there for us are, what are the professional issues? What should Peter do now? And what can we learn about good teamwork? Now, there isn't time for us to have a 10-minute discussion before we feed back, so given that you're so great at coming up with all the really good ideas here, let's just have feedback. So, first of all, what are the professional issues? What do you think they are in this situation? Back of the room, and then John at the front.
If that is his idea, which it looks like it is, she's broken the actuary's code because that's a lack of integrity.
Very good, very firmly put. John? Somebody else has got the microphone, and then John at the front. Yeah, okay. It's okay.
Just a really quick one, that the professional issue I see is the dispute around who owns IP. Is it the company you're employed by, or is it you yourself? And regardless, obviously, people are motivated by wanting to take credit for their work, but from a pure ownership perspective, there needs to be a conversation there around who you're working for and who does your work belong to. That's the professional issue. There is a sort of an ethical and happiness one underlying it as well.
Okay, thank you. So... a few issues to do with who owns the work there. John, right at the front.
John Spain, neither prize. I was going to say that was my idea too, what they said. Clearly, a lack of integrity. She has stolen. She has lied. She's done just about everything. It's pretty good if you can get away with it.
Okay, so yeah, John's taking no prisoners there. Anyone else want to add to what we think the professional issues are before we move on? Again, at the back of the room. Or we'll just take one of those ideas, I think, then.
I'm Julian, I'm not eligible for the prizes, but I think there may be just an issue on the validation of the work, so we don't know what... check and review process the work has been through, so that there is an issue. So clearly the intellectual property is owned by the employer, but given that it's now been approved by management, then that you know there is an issue on the quality control.
Right,
the intellectual
and that
property.
His two colleagues were involved in both writing and reviewing work that he really feels they should have known, they did know, was from him. Okay. What do you think he should do now?
I think he's in an extremely difficult position because obviously he's new to the company, doesn't really have any friends, and kind of doesn't really have anyone to talk to. So if he had kind of like a mentor, then maybe he could go and talk to them to see what he should do, because it is going to be very difficult for him to challenge Fern within the company because obviously she's kind of built up a reputation and she's the manager. Another thing he could do is to kind of see if there's any audit trail about her ideas. So I know they said that they were given some notes, but to ask to see those notes, because it does seem as if it was his idea, the numbers are in there. So he should kind of try and see if there's any kind of evidence to back him up, where he could talk to kind of a more senior person in the company and say, you know, look, I'm really concerned this has happened. But, you know, clearly that's kind of, you know, going to be hazardous for him in his career if he doesn't approach it in the right way.
Mm-hmm. So two at the back of the room on the other side, please.
Another thing you could do was towards the end when the email was sent out, the other two team members seemed quite surprised by that as well. So earlier it was his word against Fawns, but he could gather the support of the entire team and maybe talk to her. If not, then depending on how strongly he feels about it, he might want to talk to Fawns' manager about it in a separate, more... less confrontational conversation.
Okay, thank you. Just a bit further up in the room. Thank you.
They did say in the email that she was being rewarded as the project sponsor, not as the writer of the paper or even the originator of the idea. So it may be that whatever he does, he needs to bear in mind that whatever he does, she may not be being rewarded for his idea. She may be being rewarded for supporting a proposal that's appropriate.
Yeah, because she is the head of the team.
She is the head of the team. And the other thing is he should be probably careful of his female colleague because she was the one who told him to write it up as a proposal to Fern. And then Fern said, oh, you should have just told me. It would have saved you all that time. So he knows he needs to be careful of Fern, but he should also be careful of that female colleague who is quite possibly lying to him.
And when it was raised about speaking up to somebody more senior, I mean, that has become now a new principle, a separate principle within the Actuary's Code, maybe not just relating to this sort of situation, but... You know, as you've rightly said, as soon as you raise an issue like that, you will be doing something to your future career in that company. So there's some balance to have there. Any other views on what our little friend Peter should do? It's the same Ryan, isn't it? I know he's grown a beard in this one. He obviously didn't shoot everything on the same day.
I did had an episode in my career, I mean, before being an actuarial consultant, of a situation like this. And to be honest, the first thing I did was just to tackle it informally. I mean, there was a conversation that happened already where you could clearly see that, you know, Fern did say, you know, that we'll put this behind us. But there's no problem having that second conversation, and actually, luckily for me, that's where it ended, that informal discussion, and everything was cleared after that conversation. So I think Peter, being a new person in that business, just needs to be very careful about his actions in a dispute like that, and actually being able to be clear that, first of all, treat it and discuss it informally rather than going straight to maybe throwing a grievance or what have you. But as I said, it boils down to Peter's professionalism and whether actually there are ways to deal with this, not through formal or making his life in that workplace harder. Mm-hmm. So I think that, if it doesn't happen the first time, there's no harm doing it the second. So
we've got practical experience at the front here, as I hope you could all hear in this room. The voices just get lost in the ceiling. Practical experience of having dealt with this in real life. So, again, that's maybe one for the refreshments afterwards. You might get your ears burned on that. And I think Julian on the other side was... Feel free to confess, but obviously make things anonymous.
Next time he has a great idea, he should mention it to Fern rather than write to her and make sure that his colleagues are there when he does.
Yeah, good point. A few more ideas at the back and then we'll have to wrap up.
I mean, again, somewhat controversially perhaps, but instead of talking around ways that he can make sure he's getting the credit that he wants... They're perhaps a bit more focused on being proud that his idea has been implemented. There's a bit of a happiness point about, and I know it's really difficult, not relying on external validation and instead being happy with the integrity that you've shown and what you've put forward. It's really difficult, again, speaking from personal experience, but in the long run, it's the only surefire way to make sure this doesn't happen to you.
Yeah. Thank you. And just behind you then, please, is the last point.
I disagree with that slightly, just because, I mean, coming from a consultancy background, you would like to have some kind of validation. So even though his idea did get taken up, if he was consistently being undermined, he might not want to provide any further ideas in the future. So what works, I think, is where they would have a team structure where it's clear that the sponsor gets a certain amount of reward, but then anyone who contributed also gets something. And that way, there's also the... validation, like the non-financial validation, but also then everyone knows, okay, the better ideas that we have, the more likely they are to get sponsored, and therefore it's a win-win for everyone in the team and not just the sponsor.
Okay, thank you. So maybe that's one of the many ideas we can take back from tonight and maybe try and implement in the office over the next few months. So thank you for that. I'm just going to skip over this one. There are many more case studies, or several more case studies, I should say, on the website, and these are on there as well. So as I said at the beginning, if you want to have sessions with your teams at work, I mean, on one or any of the other videos, and there are some discussion videos to help you with the ideas, but look, you as the audience, you don't need any help with getting the salient points and lots more besides. So I do recommend that we do that. In fact, we are encouraged to do that. You know, it isn't the case that the IFOA thinks we should do all our CPD within the IFOA's building sort of thing or at conferences. It's very good to share it with non-actuaries as well. I mean, getting different views, and we're all working together. And so we want a shared appreciation of what issues can arise and then how to deal with them. Talking about the issues which arise, I mean, clearly we'll be very lucky if everything that happens to us over the next year ties in with one or other of these videos that we've watched together. So obviously there's talking to colleagues, as I'm sure you do. But there's also the professional support service from the IFOA, which might be somewhere you want to go to get. It's usually informal help and feedback on an anonymous basis, or confidential basis, I should say. So please do bear that in mind. We do just have about a minute, I think, for are there any final questions or comments before we draw our 2 hours to a close? Anything on the new version of the Actuaries Code, say? Right at the back of the room. Thank you.
If anyone submits any feedback on the Actuaries Code, what then happens to that feedback?
The feedback will be discussed by the Professional Regulation Committee. I might be using slightly the wrong name for it, but the people who, the volunteers, together with members of staff who are responsible for the professional regulation, they will collate all that, discuss it, and it will get discussed. I mean, that would be council level. I'm looking at Simon here. It wouldn't, no. But that's the sort of thing that would go right up to council. It isn't just a committee or a board, is it?
Well, the finalisation is I presume so, but
I'm it's been a number of years. Yeah, it is very high level, yes. Yes, any final question or comment, and then I will let us go home. Thank you.
Anthony Pepper, I'm not eligible for any of the prizes. it just seems to me, with all these things, I mean, you had George and Bridget, neither of them actuaries. So if they put forward something that's absolutely actuarially unsound, it seems to me that they should be taken to account in some way by the profession. I mean, a professional ought to be able to say, if you'd been an actuary, you'd have been up before the disciplinary board. So I think you've got this very serious situation when one actually is allowed to talk nonsense, which is quite rare. Mm. Bearing in mind that this is something an actuary wouldn't be allowed to say.
Any final point, and then we better go for our trains and food and what have you. Anyone already contributed to the consultation? Simon hasn't, and Julian has. Good. John, you're going to contribute, aren't you?
Good. I think we're just about ready for the champagne prizes.
Lovely. Let's move on.
So the prize for the student actually goes to Mark over there. So if you just come collect your prize afterwards. And then the IFOA member, the lady right in the back row towards the end there on the corner. I can't remember your name, but yes, if you can just come forward and collect your prize. Thank you for your participation. You've all been great. There are networking drinks in the hall outside. And then if we can just thank Helen in the usual way.